A significant number relate to implementation and major general shares. You can take those, and people from my office will also deal with some of the issues. But I just wanted to cover three issues quickly from my side. The first is the issue that's been raised about National Treasury and the decreasing of numbers of personnel within SAS. I think that we basically alluded to during our presentation to the Portfolio Committee that it hadn't been a Treasury prescript that personnel numbers had to be reduced, and that we would engage National Treasury. There have been engagements between the Minister of Police and SAS, and between SAS and National Treasury, and between SAS, National Treasury, and ourselves with regard to the decrease in personnel numbers. I think that in the response to parliamentary question that was submitted yesterday, the Minister also made this position very clear, that the position is that the end of those consultations and discussions that have taken place between the Minister and SAS, between National Treasury and SAS, and between ourselves and National Treasury, the numbers that were presented to the Portfolio Committee, the position is that those are not going to be decreased, that SAS is going to maintain its personnel levels as is required at the 197. There has also been an agreement with National Treasury that certain of the funding that will be used for the employment of personnel in the forensic environment in terms of the criminal justice review and revamp money allocated to SAS, that SAS will now be allowed to utilize that money for that personnel, for the increasing of personnel in the forensic arena. So I just wanted to clarify that point because I think it's come up from a number of different members. So I don't think that now becomes a major factor in terms of this, but I think Major General Shezi will also talk to how they are making sure that the priority posts are filled. The other issue I wanted to raise was...
Sorry, Secretary, can I just stop you there? I think it's important that committee members take note of this, because this is a perception that has been created, that the last intake would be January. There is no such thing. Treasury did not instruct SAPS to do so. Treasury instructed SAPS to make a saving, as all departments. SAPS made a choice to say that's where we're going to cut. And what the Secretary is explaining to us now is that they are looking at other places, am I correct, where they will find these savings. And it will not be in terms of personnel figures. The personnel figures will remain. I think that is the important thing. And I think we need to put that record straight, because I know also the media has been having the perception that SAPS is going to cut personnel by 9,000. So I just wanted to make it clear that we all understand this issue.
Could I just have clarity here? Because General Stunder, as head of training, she sat right here, if we were in this room, and she stated categorically, and I typed it out two or three times, the last intake of SAPS trainees will be in January. She said it over and over and over again. They went on to say, 9,000 members, we must drop 9,000. No one will be retrenched, no one will be fired. However, they lose, I think, 2,200 odd through natural attrition each year. We may not rehire until we've dropped 9,000 in numbers. That was what was stated to us by SAP's top structure. So now you're saying they were, what, telling us things that were not true. I know what I would call it, but perhaps it's not politic to use that phrase. So just tell me, what was General Stunder talking about, if in fact that's a load of baloney?
I think I must make it clear again. It was what they have decided at that point in time, but it wasn't an instruction from Treasury. Treasury won't instruct the department to cut its personnel. That was what the management decided to do. Since then, the minister has intervened, and there has been discussions both with Treasury and the management of SAPS. And they have been instructed to find the savings at another place, but not at personnel. So when the bottom becomes for us again, we will then ask them, where are you going to find the savings?
Okay, so to clarify, they will have further intakes after January. Because I've had a lot of people say to me, but I want to join the SAPs. Now what do I do if they're not taking any more people? So thank you for clarifying that. How bizarre. Utterly bizarre.
Just to reiterate what the Chair said, those discussions took place post that portfolio committee meeting, and the latest discussion that I had with Treasury was Monday before coming to Cape Town, where that position was clarified, that because we heard from SAP that Treasury had agreed, and I met with Treasury on Monday and they reiterated that they agreed, but also that they agreed to that ring-fenced amount for the forensic services. They've agreed to allow the forensic services to use that for personnel. That was what was National Treasury informed me Monday, but as I say, those discussions took place after them meeting you. So it wasn't that they were lying to you, it's just that developments have occurred subsequent to that portfolio committee meeting. That's the first point. The second point is just on the privatisation and the issue of quality, and I think that so I'll clarify that we're talking about the difference between the samples and database, and they're two different things. But I think one of the things we need to be very clear of with regard to the database is that the use of how that database gets utilized and who is allowed and for what purposes that database is set up is crucially important to this process. That the database should not be allowed to be used for anything other than what Major General Shesi said, crime, crime, crime. Now, if that database is housed in the public sector, we don't have complete and absolute control over whether it could be used for other purposes. And I think that becomes really important in terms of the housing of this database, and also that ultimately we will be accountable to Parliament and to the public for how that database is utilised. And if that database is outside of the scope of our control, we would not be able to account for how that database is utilised. So I just wanted to make that point, as well as the issue of costs, because I think that when I was in the UK, one of the issues that was raised with me on the first visit to the UK around this issue was that Scotland Yard were complaining about the costs and how costs may have been set initially, but they just began to escalate and de-escalate out of control. And the end result of that was that Scotland Yard were saying, budget-wise, because there had been so much privatisation and costs were, it became a very competitive price costing war, that basically what was happening was they were basically having to select which cases to run and which cases not to run. And they felt that that was placing their crime fighting at jeopardy. So that's the second point I wanted to make. The third point I wanted to make is that we need to look at this legislation and say that it is an important tool in our crime-fighting exercise. But we also have to acknowledge, and I think that's one of the things that we have grappled with in the policy and spelled out in quite a lot of detail, it might not come across in the slides, but in the policy itself, is the difference between the fact ourselves in the UK in that we have a Bill of Rights in South Africa. And that Bill of Rights is going to determine how this database gets used, including issues like running familiar searches, etc. We have to look at that in the context of having a Bill of Rights in place. So for us, the importance is to develop this legislation and this database in such a way that it will not be challenged constitutionally, but that it also assists us in the fight against crime. And I think that's our position with regard to those issues. So I just wanted to highlight those three issues, and then I'll just hand over to Ms. Omar and then Major General Shesi to deal with some of the other issues.
Thank you. Honourable Kola Barnard, your question on DNA from all citizens. We not recommending that because of the human rights violation or the potential for human rights violation. It has been addressed before during the hearings of the bill. So we were very specifically chose the particular categories, and we're not recommending all citizens for that reason. On the DNA of women by women...
Sorry, I didn't ask that ever. I don't know who asked that, but...
Sorry.
I don't want to challenge me having said that, because I've never made such a suggestion, I assure you.
Okay, there's also justice on the familiar search.
Yeah, the familiar search, yeah. Okay. Okay, then you made a point of the DNA of women by women police. I think that's an important point which we never addressed in the policy, which we noted and will add to the policy. Familial searches the secretary has addressed. It's, even within 6 months, the question was if it's guilty, would it remain on the database? Yes, we're recommending that it do remain on the database for potential or future hits. Human rights issues, important, how is it going to be dealt with? We've addressed this in the policy quite extensively, but and we're recommending safeguards be put in place. But I think right now of today in the discussion, we can put in, we can add in more on safeguards in the policy, and as well as the oversight body that we're recommending. We are giving them lots of work to do in terms of safeguards and human rights, prevention of human rights abuse. Expansion after 6 months not removed. The policy, it's a repetition of the question we said. We are saying that the policy has safeguards in place. I think it's a question you raised. In relation to the committee and the Department of Home Affairs was left out of the committee, you know, it was difficult to choose departments for the committee. It wasn't deliberate. We had to leave some departments out and add some departments, but it's something that we can address in the policy and add it in as well. So if Home Affairs is seen as an important department, we will include them.
I just come in there. I think the issue of Home Affairs is a relevant issue because of the fact that we're also working together with Home Affairs in terms of the fingerprint part of it. Now, if we talk about refugees, et cetera, and you might want to have samples taken of refugees, it becomes an important issue. So maybe that is a suggestion that we would, as a committee, propose be taken on board.
I think that in the policy there will be protocols with a number of different government departments. I think what we're talking about here is who will be part of the oversight committee, and I think the point is taken that we need to include Home Affairs as part of that oversight committee because of specific legislation also around immigration, etc. So I think the point is taken and we will add them onto that oversight committee.
Thank you. If I
may, just before you continue, something else that was raised during our trip in relation to Home Affairs was the possibility of someone who finds a body, badly decomposed body. So one has the DNA, but of course there's no way to track it down through any fingerprint database. And there was an allowance that they could make applications to this database to say, may we run this through for DNA to see if we can find out who this person was. I don't know if you've made some sort of provision for that, but it may be something you want to consider.
I think some of the issues, I think that we need to look at some of the issues in terms of policy and some of the issues we might want to include in the legislation. Now, I think also the Honourable Member spoke about the people who visit the forensic laboratory. And, I mean, I think that if you're going to go into the section which is dealing with DNA, it's crucial that you have an elimination sample taken. But then when does that get removed? Because I went to the UK on two occasions. The second time was a year later, and they didn't have to take a sample from me because they already had my sample. Now I would say to them, but hang on, why is my sample still here? I left your country a year ago. Surely you should have removed it at that point. So I think some of those technical issues we do need, and I think we need to just go back after this presentation and look at what should be in policy and what should we flag to put into the legislation, but they definitely need to be included. That's definite.
In that regard, as I recall, those of us who had the DNA taken when we went into the UK laboratory filled out a form saying, could you please destroy this or expunge it after a six-month period. Technically, you didn't fill out the form, but we most certainly did. So they have some sort of method in the process to deal with exactly that.
So, I'm sorry, I'm going to ask you to keep your follow-up questions so that we give them an opportunity to answer. Keep record of your follow-up questions, and then we can take a second round of questions.
Thank you. Chair, you asked the question on the policy should have penalties. We have noted this. We touched on it, but it can have more specifics in relation to penalties. We'll add that into the policy. Somebody asked a question in relation to charged index. I think the issue here speaks to potential human rights violations. And we are specific that it's about charged at court. I think it was yourself related. Sorry, this was answered before. The volunteer index is for missing persons. That was the question. Yes, it's for missing persons for exclusionary purposes. It's not mandatory, but it's something that should be voluntary. Authorized police officers, what type of police officers? Maybe I can get the general to answer that question. Maybe on page 14 we noted we will change it to must. How will the database be populated? In the implementation phase, I've mentioned that phase one, we should go to the prison. The prison, convicted offenders profile should be, a sample should be taken in phase one as we continue towards phase two. That's about how we started looking at it, but I don't know if the general can add more on that as well. The next two questions, security between the indices and then training of police officers in court, I'm also going to pass on to the general to answer. Thank you.
The general did. Just before the general, one of the things the policy does say is that the volunteer database cannot be used for searches for criminal purposes. So that there is a distinction between the two databases. So I think the policy does spell that out, which I think is a concern that the Honourable Chair raised, is that if a missing child database is loaded as a volunteer, that it cannot be used to search for criminal purposes, so that there would have to be a separation within the database with regard to that.
Thank you, Chair. May I go through the questions in the order that it was raised? I'll jump those that have already been addressed. But also, Chair, perhaps I may be a little bit slower, but maybe speak faster in terms of the discussions today. It appears to me that some of the questions asked are mainly implementational at the legislative level. So there's a little bit of intermixing of the concepts. I'm going to try to stay away from the legislative aspects and sort of focus on the politics. We might just miss the crux of the matter. Some of the real issues asked are really not in the policy level, but I do take a cognizance of the questions asked, and I will go through in detail. I'm just afraid that there will be more questions coming up. I did not bring forth now the presentation at that level of implementation on the level of legislation, but we will address this as much as we possibly can. The first one was how far is accreditation of the laboratory. I made already a statement to say that we had made a stance to say we have engaged on the process with SANAS. There is one body that does accreditation in our country, and that's SANAS. And interestingly, I'm the member of the technical committee, the SANAS technical committee that sets standards for accrediting forensic labs. And it is a fact that there are no enough technical assessors to do the accreditation of the laboratories in the country. Our discussions when I deliberate on the accreditation brand at the time, because it includes the body itself that will do the accreditation. Amongst the assessors that will do the assessment for accreditation of the forensic laboratories are not the assessors that will be coming necessarily within our country. They may have to be borrowed, for lack of a better term, from countries that already have those requisite expertise to be able to do the accreditation of the forensic laboratories. Now, the question is how far that process is. It will be mainly detailed as to the level of engagement in the breaking down of that implementation plan as to how far will SANAS itself prepare for that accreditation route. So we may be left this option. The agency of this accreditation in lieu of the bill, how far will accreditation impact on this? How will they as an organization be able to source the technical expertise? If they've got to develop them in-house, what is it that they've got to set in place to ensure that enough technical assessors are trained for those people? So it is not entirely resting on the forensic to accredit. It rests on the accredited body as well to do the accreditation. So it is a dual process which we have to take into cognizance. That is why I was saying earlier, what role does accreditation really benefit, except for technical competence in the agency, particularly around agency issues, not in the achieving thereof, so that all government departments or bodies that do such are correctly on par to do such a thing. We've got to grant the international companies, so be it, but is it in line with the government priorities? But accreditation plan will be presented as we go through the process. Number two question was the training of officers by medical practitioners. The delays, how long will it kickstart? Why is training not given yet, although there is money allocated for the training? This is the requirement of the Act. It's a compliance issue. It is published within the provisions of the National Health Act that such training shall be conducted by medical practitioners. Now, whether there are two or three in the country, it's not a matter of police not to comply. We must comply, unless then others will be arresting our own selves for non-compliance. So, if the Act says this shall be the case shall it be. How we circumvented it, perhaps the question is, how did you go around the same issues? That's the process we did to compile now the specifications, go out on a big process. We take note that there are doctors that have gone private. We take note that there's Department of Health that may be interested in providing the services, so that we publish a bid process that this is what we have to achieve, these are the requirements. Are you there out there as a medical practitioner to be able to drive this process? Now, this also takes to the number of police persons to be trained. The question was, how will you determine which police officer will you prioritize? See, that's amongst other things, some of the issues that need to be dealt with once informed by what is the direction of the policy really. But for starters, you will have in a phased-in approach. Of course, you want to have all training all police officers all trained at once. You would want to stagger a process to say, I will first begin to do the visible policing people because they are anyway, since they are the first almost there in the place. You won't ignore your detectives. In fact, you won't even ignore the LCRC experts. You'll remember in the first presentation I said, if you train LCRC personnel, what is the level of independence out of their cases? As the bill matures or the implementation matures, you will say, these crime scene experts who had attended this one, these particular cases, may not be the same one collecting the samples. But at the end, you will want to have all police officers trained in collecting samples. You wouldn't want to have a singular police officer that does not or does not have the capacities to be able to can collect the DNA reference material. But of course, there shall be starting points. This will also talk to cluster stations. Which priority stations will you first begin with? What is the state of readiness of those priority stations? What is the state of readiness within the courts where these rooms will be implemented? What is the involvement of PWD? So it's interdepartmental engagements that you are beginning with, which I had earlier said that yes, we will pass the policy. If it is not resting within the policy, it goes to the private sector. Well, with due respect, be able to perform outside those legislations or outside those provisions, I don't think they will still be the case because there are a number of other critical role players that need to be forming part of the same achievement going forward. So yes, the training of officers, honourable member, it is a mandatory issue prescribed by law. We can unfortunately train our own experts as we are. We will have to allow, we first have to train the medical practitioner for the medical practitioner to train the police officer. That's how it goes, but it's law. Okay. The other question was taking of DNA samples from citizens. It's already been asked, answered in terms of inclusion in the policy there. Provisions considering to insert or to take the visitors of the DNA, that's a critical one. In fact, in our lab, we've already placed it on record that we've got to include all visitors to the DNA lab on the elimination database, you know, so that when visitors come on board, samples must be provided in, we've got to load them on the database, so that we've got to eliminate on those conditions mentioned by the honourable member in case of cross-contamination. However, we cannot do that or enforce it unless it is legislated. You see, it is good practice, we are doing it scientifically, but we are simply asking that would you mind if you can, but of course for rights issues, we cannot enforce that. Familiar searches, the issue was taken care of. I actually liked the comment on the familiar searches. It's also a wide human rights sector also in our country. In fact, even in the UK, the privacy commissioner there spoke about the biosurveillance. You can imagine if you are told that your younger brother is a criminal. In the democratic country that we are, as an organization, we are required to be adhering to the policies of government. We really cannot influence the process, but there needs to be an understanding what constitutes familiar searches. As I talk to the volunteer index later on and talk to the categories of the indices within the volunteer indices, we'll see how missing persons, how unidentified bodies can be within those regulations of those indices. But thus, those are issues also that will be covered by the oversight body or governing body, which we'll talk into how do we utilize now the information on the database, what are the real risks, which I don't think it'll be a policy discussion for today. Okay, the other symbol of the reference to the Department of Health, the delay in the lab results, we take note, I think that has been dealt with. in terms of the provision of the law. The one question also was to clarify the focus in terms of costs for privatization. I think the Secretary answered that very well. In terms of, amongst other questions that we asked the FSS, I think it was Colonel Bombardino, said, what would we have done wrong? And then the first question from the amongst the top first-class countries that we made a mistake by allowing privatization. We would have prevented it from the beginning. That's the unfortunate part of the blunt answer that we got from the countries. Contrary, when we were in Canada, when the same question was posed as to what is the success, was that it just was the governance that was placed in the management of this database by the oversight bodies, as well as the control, the utilization of the parliament as in terms of being managed by the government officials. In our country, it is only SAPS that is mandated to deal with crime, even crime intelligence. It can in no way rest with the private individual unless provisions of the law are being addressed to change that focus. Okay, the other one is talking to the accreditation. Why are there delays? I spoke about why delays. Because some of you are waiting for this technical expertise. Delays are not in terms of the competence. The days are for man are really the competence that we have, how many people who can do those assessments in those tests. It will be something that we are looking forward to be going. The other dynamic in it is that our country is so free and it's so expressive. It allows the expressions of different individuals. It is such a crisis that even our own members, Madam Chair, who live at the environment, would leave their environment knowing that in this DNA process, this particular SOP is not in place. For whatever reason, this one is not in place. When we go to testify in court, the defense are using our own experts who were trained by our own money to want to discredit the operations in-house. What made my experience in the cases I had attended where such was the case, the judge or whoever is presiding will ask, does it nullify the correctness of the results? No, it doesn't. What does it nullify? Perhaps the compliance to the standard in terms of not having put in place a statement that goes on like this. What I'm saying, Chairperson, is amongst the guiding or worrying issues that are facing us as a department as to if the assessors that will be used in the country will do the assessment for accreditation, will it be done under ethical considerations? Will it be a proper process to follow? Could you rather opt to look at different options? But those discussions are, of course, in place. And when we provide the Parliament with a report, we should have at least done a thorough study as to what are the risks involved in terms of maintaining the integrity of the issues within our police. There are other questions also to the volunteers. How are you going to deal with the issues of volunteers in terms of perhaps the confidence? If one in the index, I think the member was explaining here, if you are misfiling your profile, those are SOPs to the level of detail. Under which circumstances are you going to load what profile? Those are the languages that you will write into the programming of the database, the software that you will manage this database system. The Honourable Chairperson asked, could PCAM be the correct vehicle to be looking into this dynamic? At the time that we compiled the specifications to run the database, Madam Chair, we had looked at the option of CODIS. And it is a fact that the forensic lab has got a number of systems, among which we had FSL admin, it's got SLS, those systems that Parliament has already talked to. Integrating the level of information generated by the system into the CODIS software were rights that we were not given by the compilers of the software. They say, yes, you can have the software, you utilize it as is, because of course, it's amper mahala. But now integrating it, it won't be a purpose. So we found that it will not be a cost-effective manner. You have the independent system that is not talking to what you want to feed from the process. What would be the relevance thereof? Be that as it may, it was 5 years when this, the inputs were given. I am backing now on a visit back to the owners of the CODIS to find out, would you be able to open up a system for integration so that it is able to take all the information that has been generated over these many years into consideration when it is utilized? Because, Madam Chair, I'm not confident that by September next year we will be writing a software that will be running with the capacity that we have in-house. Okay. Department of Home Affairs was done, the penalties was done. The volunteer index, the categories that we anticipating, there were missing persons, unidentified bodies, victims themselves to put in there, so that the people can have the option of removing the samples at any time within the prescribed time frames that are agreed to by Parliament. One of the time frames that was suggested is the 6 months. Do we really want to be married to the 6 months of expansion? What are the logistical points? Currently, with the facilities that we have, we are almost at the top range of having acquired the number of personnel for accommodation purposes. You can't employ more than the number that the accommodation can be able to accommodate. Now, with what we have, we process 50,000. If you want to process 250,000, you mean logically, it means you must expand. Now, with the expansion, there are a number of issues. Now, if you were to say, let's take this facility to the private sector, how ready can they be to also build that building to be able to capacitate, to be able to get there? Now we've got the police, we've got public works, we've got who's doing what in the building. There are a number of issues that need to be taken into account. If we process 50,000 with the current status and we are working at optimal level, and now we're going to get 250 or three times more than one time, more than if you can say you double it. Now, as you process, you load, and then you want to do your searches. Now, how many people are being completed their serving of their sentences every 6 months? So your work will literally be on expansion and expansion. Until when are you going to be loading and loading? I mean, with the capacity. I'm only bringing in the realities of the capacity needs, accommodation needs, the time frame we set ourselves. We will not comply if the time frames are shortened to a level of 6 months. Perhaps we may review the process to see actually what is the feasible period of expansion, which why I said earlier, perhaps this is not a forum for the discussion of the policy matter, but we need to be looking into the detail of how long after that thing can that expansion happen for logistical compliance issues in terms of processing time, because we've got a responsibility to balance both. Okay. What type of police officer we spoke, what is the criteria set? We spoke about the police officers, as who will you go in first, how will you manage that? Is the forensic awareness program as to, if you don't train police officers yet, the program is already currently running. So we've got these laws coming, this is what we anticipate to be achieving. Currently there are still consultations which are not finalized yet with Division HRU to include within the detective program the forensic awareness method. But until that is happening, we have our in-house compiled forensic awareness program which will be addressing these issues to our own police. The only challenge is not happening as fast as we want it to, because of balancing what is the priority at the stage in terms of processing, setting in systems, allowing for change in the structures of police and all those dynamics, and to be able to also reach the goals as intended by the policies. How do you intend populating the database? I saw in the presentation of the Secretariat, my apologies, is to say, if you are going to be doing the populating and starting with the convicted felon, how many are there in the country? I don't know how many are there. Perhaps maybe that will include our waiting time. Maybe they are charged. Okay, people that are in jail. Now those ones are coming in. We already have the simple crimes that are coming in. There will be volumes of samples that are coming in. And then, with the accommodation, I've already said, realities in terms of what do you want to achieve first? You know, to which ones do you want to ensure that you are comfortable, you are moving with space, having taken care of those restrictions that you can't do away with in the current status. The oversight body, we spoke about it. I personally, from the quality management point of view, I'm a fan of an oversight body. I do independent assessment of processes enough. I'm not personally involved, so I have nothing to defend. My colleagues sometimes become very upset with me when I do those processes. It will be nice to have somebody doing the same also to us. Who governs the governing body? Who oversees the oversight? So I'm particularly interested in this one, so that all departments who are key can be able to justify the credibility and the integrity that comes out of what the police generates, and there won't be any queries about privatization or not, because it's mainly around integrity issues, which issues can be simply corrected. implementation plan about police stations? How do you manage actual samples, taking into consideration the volumes that are found in the SAP settings during the portfolio visits? We have made a stand that all the provincial LCRC heads, given their status in the PCCF, that they make this standing matter in terms of reporting on the collections of the SAP setting. There are a number of provinces that are doing better, that where you are beginning to see progress with regard to submitting the SAP 13 exhibits, or those exhibits that have been cupped or locked away in the police doors for many years, that those exhibits must be sent in, because we want them sent to the lab even if they are 20 years old. If it's an exhibit, it better come. Those are amongst other issues that we'll be able to assist when we have established the database and it has been passed, to be able to sort out the number of crimes that took over many years which were not dealt with in accordance to how it must be dealt with. So we are anticipating, Madam Chair, to see in the reporting that is coming out in this new financial year how the progress in that regard is happening. But amongst other issues, when we deal with awareness, we are also dealing with the chain of custody issues. I don't want to say PKM again, but let me say PKM. It was supposed to address the chain of custody issues, starting from the collection of crime scenes into police stations, linked to cars, so that we are able to track and trace the chain of custody.
General, I'm going to interrupt you. We just want to welcome the Deputy Minister here with us. Deputy Minister, welcome. We're very glad to see you, although the circumstances that we are seeing you, we would have preferred you still being behind this desk. It's a pity you were not here earlier this morning when everybody was expressing their appreciation for yourself, but we will relay those to you personally. I can just in summary say that we have taken a decision as the committee that our work will continue in the same spirit and with the same robustness, with the same commitment, and with the same enthusiasm as you have led us up to now. We congratulate you. We believe you deserve it 110%. I think Reverend Meshu made a very good comment this morning when he said this committee's loss is transport's gain, and we believe that is very, very true. We know it's a big challenge, but we have no doubt in our minds that you will cope with it brilliantly. So good luck from all of us as well. You want to say something?
Thank you very much. I'm rushing, but I thought, let me just come to the portfolio committee that late Cindy Chikunga. And I think from my heart, I want to thank you all, members of the portfolio committee. Not a person in this parliament has a team of members that I had in the portfolio committee. And I can refer to each one of you the contributions that you have made. When I tell my comrades that Diana Kola Barnett has a son who's driving an old car but with new parts, and she's paid for each part, they say, how do you know? I say, because we talk about those things. It's not just about politics and politics, but we go on to talk about our families. And you will know when she is in pain about something, and you will be in pain. And you will know when you go out of your office, you've received a message that there is a taxi accident somewhere, and the first people that you meet are Okola Barnett and Chafer. And they say, how are you? All you do, you cry. And they run around to ensure that you are okay. I wouldn't want to talk about members, Honorable Babu Ndlovu. Sometimes you think they give you the respect you don't deserve, but they've always been a pillar of support. The wife is having perfumes that I taught him to buy. And it is so nice. Honorable Lulek George is, with his experience as the minister, which normally he would, if not matured, brought to the portfolio committee and probably impose himself, but he's given you a space as a chairperson and respect, and will come in strategically on issues and provide some leadership. And probably will want to end with my comrades from the ANC, Annelies. She's been serving in this portfolio committee for much longer. It would have been very easy for her to dictate things, but she's not. She's been such a support to me, my successes, and everything. Mam Angie, Mam Sibiya Popi, Lekgetho, your contributions, the manner in which you've dealt with things, discussed things, I really want to thank you very much. I want to thank members that have been with us and probably were changed. I can name them all. From the ANC, it would have been Chauke. From the ANC, it would have been Chefa, Swate. And I've never felt something like this is a DA member. It is in this portfolio committee where when you are out, you can deploy any member to lead a team without hearing that on coming back it will be politics. When we do our work as a portfolio committee, we do our work with interest of the country at heart. I want to appreciate everything, and you've made me to be Cindy Chikunga, and each one of you have played your part. I've always been listening when you make comments about me, even in the media. You made me to be this super chief. And the media have believed I'm this super chief. So some of you, through your comments, you've profiled me to be this best person in this parliament. I'm appreciating everything, and I'm promising you that I will continue to work hard. I will not disappoint you. I am not going to be corrupt, nor corrupted, nor corrupt anybody. I fear God, and I have my name, my integrity, that I think I've worked so hard for, and will not want anything to change that, and will not want to disgrace you, but to disgrace my family, but to disgrace my belief. I will not do it, and I promise you to do that. And I will always count on your support, that I can always, when I'm stressed, maybe I can always just want to say I am stressed. And you'll always listen. The department is not here, but also I've learned so much from the Department of Police. It's a very heavy, it's a very difficult department. It's about the safety of the country, and when you are to lead it or to oversee it, it calls for some dedication, some hard work, but sometimes some robustness. I know that probably somewhere where they are, they might feel that we've been overdoing it, but it has always been, and it is in the interest of this country, that we think that we've got to be robust. And really, I do believe that, please continue and do better. Some of you are better informed than Cindy Chikunga. You made me to be what I am. I really want to thank you. I want to thank the Secretariat. I want to thank the IPED. I want to thank our stakeholders, universities, anybody, civil organizations that worked with us and guided us and assisted us, the AG office. I think I want to thank everybody, really. To be honest, I'm too shocked. I'm still shocked. I'm trying to recover from shock, but I'm still shocked. I still prefer to be seen at least, or chaperson. Once a chaperson, always a chaperson. I just want to say that and thank everybody that supported and that continue and that will continue to support me. I need your support. I want to thank the media. It's not many people that have received positive reporting as myself in the media. Sometimes when people report bad about this portfolio committee, you'll actually hear them phoning to say, but so-and-so is saying something like this, and they will literally take sides with us. I want to thank them honestly and from my heart, and I hope we'll continue to work together. Thank you very much. I just want to say that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Minister, may we also ask you that if you see we are going wrong, to let us know as well. I'm sure you will. But if you see we're lifting our foot from the pedal, let us know, please. Thank you, members. Sorry, Daniel, for that, but I know she's rushing off as well, so my apologies for interrupting you. Can continue, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For a moment, I thought she was going to ask you questions.
Yes.
I thought for a moment, I thought she was going to ask you questions.
You were worried she was going to ask
Yes. Thank you. Just an enlightenment, Madam Chair. We were talking about the implementation plan, experience at the police stations. She walked in at the time we were talking about the SAP 13 exhibits and the use of PCAM in the chain of custody, as to by the time the police is implemented, would we have achieved the rollout or the benefits out of where it was supposed to be. I must say, in those instances where PKM is implemented in the environment, we do see benefits, which will go a long way if they will be rolled out to the police station from the electrician track portion of it. How many centers or police stations or officers are you intending, also in relation to what type of a police person are you looking for? The question was also partly answered in terms of the phasing in approaches as to where do we focus first in the baseballs and the clusters, as to what are the numbers that we'll be looking into, as well as the provision of that training, depending on who now gets the bid or who gets to be awarded that contract to do the necessary training, and then we can be setting up. Those will be influenced to a great extent also on the outcomes of the adoption or the approval of the policy. Is PKM the best solution? We already spoke about it. The security between the indices. I think the greater number of work that has been done in the whole process of security of the DNA database rather is the security issues. Security in terms of the people, even working in the in the DNA database from the vetting point of view, lifestyle audits, whether they understand the nature of or the consequences of utilizing information in there for whatever purposes, which is within the legislation, but not maybe perhaps captured in the policy, as it was inquired by the Honourable Member, but Madam Blakis has already touched on those issues to be included there. But they are interesting dynamics that are placed in the programs in terms of security, in the biometric accesses, and also that people can now exchange the passwords. It will be their finger that will open up the accessibility. We will determine the level of access into who gets access to what level, you know, in the different databases, so that we need to protect the integrity. But also these are SOP matters which will go to the level of detail. But in terms of what we need from the softwares or the basis that CODIS has, we had actually built more of it in this anticipated system that we were going to implement in-house in terms of the security. So security should really not be a concern if those provisions would be met as a recommendation. And which one? I think, Chair, I've covered all the questions. Unless there's any question that I've really missed out, it was not intentional. We may have to address it if there is any. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the answers. Can I just, I'm going to give members an opportunity if there are follow-up questions or if you feel there's a question of yourself that has not been answered. But can I just raise the fact that when I was talking about the material that we found at Potch Police Station, we were not talking about used material. We were not talking about rape kits that samples were taken off. We're talking about what basically become fruitless expenditure. It is about buying and keep on buying and keep on buying, but you haven't used what is available in your stores. And at some point, this expires. So what we want to say, and I mean, you don't have necessary to answer, but what we are saying is we need to make sure in our implementation also that we address that issue. I don't know what the cost per rape kit is. It's something that we've asked previously, but if you think about 1,500 at one accounting station, you know, it becomes a huge amount that we talk about. So that was what we're talking about. I think that the question on how are you going to get the samples from where they are to the laboratory still remains something that I think we need to get more detail on when you talk about the full implementation plan. I also think from the answers that we're not clear yet, General, on what type of police officer, because you make it clear in the policy that it will not be every police officer that will be taking samples, and that we will have designated places like court, the room in a court, designated police stations. And, you know, I don't think we want to see, for instance, as lawmakers, that not discriminating against the police officers, but that somebody from public order policing is suddenly taking samples, because their approach would be different than somebody in the SCS, for instance, and the family violence unit, for instance. So that's the question, the core question that members are asking. What type of police officer are we looking at? I think it also comes into career pathing within SAPS as well. What type of police officer? You look for somebody with a softer approach, et cetera, et cetera. I think there are still questions that remain in terms of once we pass this legislation, the knowledge about the legislation. We are extremely frustrated. Every single time that we go out and you ask detectives whether they're aware of the fingerprint legislation that was passed, and they tell you they're not. If you ask provinces whether they are aware of it, and they tell you they're not. If you ask them, are you using it, are you searching against Home Affairs fingerprint databases, and they tell you they're not. And we all know what the advantages of that can be. So I think that is the implementation issues that one will have to look at. Luckily, we have the time to put these things in place while we are drafting the legislation, etc. Maybe there are things that are happening already, but I think those are the core issues that members are experiencing when they are on the ground and doing oversight as well. Members, are there any outstanding questions? Honourable George?
Thank you very much, madam. I've just got an article here which says, in order for a DN database to be used as a more effective criminal intelligence tool, South Africa must expand its database and make it compulsory for all suspects to have DNA tests taken at the time of arrest. Now, what I heard when you people were responding to Reverend Meshwa is that you only take DNA tests when somebody is charged. Is that my correct understanding? Because I want to be sure. The question which the general tried to ask, but she did not ask it from the perspective which was given by the lady from Secretary. You must pardon me, I forget names quickly. The general said, if I understood her well, she said it's for the sake of security and that you would prefer this thing to be done in-house, not by a private company. Of course, you also referred to what happens in UK and other countries, which sometimes I always don't want comparison, because it's always sometimes better to compare apples with apples when you compare South Africa with a first world country, especially in security. There's always a problem. But the lady from Secretary, we talked about cost. That's why I asked the question. If you say this cost, how do you measure this cost? If you say it's because of cost, can you quantify, say, in terms of doing this thing internally, these are the costs we're doing it in several, these are the savings we are making. I think to me that it would help us to, you see. Of course, I heard you, General, you about the people being strained, but you have not given me confidence because you said you depend on the availability of practitioners to train your police officers. My main worry is exactly that you pass a bill and it depends on other people who have no control over, and then 1, 2, 3, you know the firearm registry, it was a very big issue. It's still a big issue now. So many assurances were made, this and this and this is going to be done. Now you are honest, but your honesty also makes me even more worried when you said it's going to be medical practice. Unfortunately, is the dictate of the law. If I understand, the dictate of the law, there is not much you can do. But you're not saying what is it that you're going to do to make sure that you don't come here 6 months down the line and say, I would have loved to train so many police, but the availability of practitioners to train has been a problem, and unfortunately, it's something which is outside my control.
I'm going to give you an opportunity. I just want to stress the point that I think the Honourable George's question in terms of training, I don't know whether he's maybe missed it. It's also the fact that it will go out on a bid. It will not be a voluntary training. So there will be performance for those medical practitioners, performance measurements for those medical practitioners in terms of training as well. It's not as if the Department of Health, for instance, is going to do the training. It will go out on bid. Somebody will bid to do the training. They will make money allocated for the training. The company or companies will be paid to do that, and there will be performance measurements for that company as well. But if I can give them an opportunity to react to it, I think it's important also that the question that the Honourable George is raising in terms of the article that he's reading, sometimes I think it's important that one reads where the article comes from as well, that you explain the importance of and the challenges in terms of having just getting samples in and not running your samples, you know, just populating, and the challenges that come with that as well. If you can just explain that to us as well, please.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me start with that one of collecting samples from everyone arrested. In terms of what was discussed earlier, I think Madam Omar explained it very well. You do not want to create a perception of violating anybody's rights, because as soon as you arrest a person, they still have to be charged for it. Now we have already arrested, and then you've taken a sample, this person is now not charged. And now we process the sample, loaded on the database, the other dynamics of now getting it removed, all the legal challenges that you would want to avoid. But as soon as a person is charged, there are reasonable grounds. There are a number of amendments that are happening to a number of laws. It's, you can't just charge a person unless there are reasonable grounds to effect the charge to a person, then all the other processes will kickstart. So it is important, as the Chair said, where is the source of this information? Perhaps it was the input that came up which was not qualified to say in a charged person, so that understanding is clarified. But yes, indeed, the reference samples will be taken from a charged individual. If it were not the case, how many samples then would you actually anticipate to receive? So one of the questions was, would you want to type every person in the country? Well, I have an article that I'm looking for. I cannot find it. It's about the use of DNA in Jerusalem. I was reading to my colleagues in the publication of The Citizen yesterday that the Jerusalem police officers have gone to an extent of typing dog poo. They've loaded all the samples of DNA of dogs in their database. Now they've got problems with poo in the pavement. Now they've established in the past that they are going to type the poo to link it to the owner, to the dog of the owner. You know, that's how far DNA has progressed in those countries. Now, one question would ask, if they are going to look at poo and dogs, do they have everyone in their database it'll be interesting to look at the provision of the law in the Jerusalem to see, do Jerusalem people have all their DNAs on the database? Now, at sort of, we're not even in the dog stage yet, let alone your poo. It won't come now. But the RSTs, how many, what is the rate of RSTs in the country? You know, the crime patterns, there are a number of implications. The chair asked, what is the cost of the kit? We have revised the kit. The chair, there were a number of components within the kit, which with our understanding we've realized not all the submissions that are made in the one kit are taken or used by the very medical practitioners. You'll find out of the elements that are in there, only a third of what was used gets used. The rest goes for wasteful expenditures, you may say. So we have redesigned the kit. We have published a new contract so that we are taking those considerations into account. Also with that matter chair that you raised in terms of the unutilized kits, we, amongst part of the PKM is LabWare. Now this LabWare is an information management system. This LabWare is going to tell you how many of what types of samples do you receive where, because we want to manage that as well. If you have these reported cases in KZN, how much of, for example, the sexual offences cases come in to the lab in relation to what has been procured in terms of kits, or as well as the trained police to gather the evidence. So there are a number of systems that we've put in place so that we are able to, at the end, get to run the DNA part, but then it is still expected of us, which is a good thing, to be able to roll out this problem to all the detectives. But earlier on, I also did say, you've got to be able to balance the two. Yes, you have to train the people out there, but we also have the responsibility to process what has come up so that we are reporting to court, because we've got deadlines in terms of reporting in court, we've got deadlines in terms of the resources needs. The people that we utilize to do the training are also the people that have to keep abreast with what is happening in there. So there are a number of dynamics that must be controlled, but surely, as the chair said, we are going to be monitoring all those issues in terms of what the secretariat had also proposed when we are working into the DNA policies, to go to that level of capturing these issues. But also coming back to the securities and the cost, which the honourable member asked, Madam Chair, the cost versus the integrity issues, to me is not a problem. The question was posed, will it be cheaper when it is the public sector, or will it be cheaper when it is the government sector? Now, we are going also in detail as to going to say, the providers of the chemistries that are utilized in all DNA labs, do they cost the police more or the public more? Will they cost the private cheaper? That answer can be answered. Then it'll be easy to know which one will be going cheaper. Because there are tendencies about these private companies to bill the state more than they would have with the private companies. You know, so those are the dynamics. But if they're going to be utilized in the same kit, which we buy from the same manufacturer, depending on how much they pay their own experts, the cost must rather be the same. I don't see any cost. But the crux of the matter is, who's got the mandate to process what they are processing? Is the mandate resting with the private people or with the police? Can't be whose responsibility is crime? Are we now outsourcing crime? One of the questions that was asked was the courier service. How are they going to get to the lab? That can be outsourced. It's not a crime, it's not a core business of health. It's not legislated in the mandate of WhatsApp Master Chief, but we've got to see what can be outsourced versus what cannot be outsourced in terms of the provisions that they're making in-house. So the training of police officers, again, Honourable Member, through you, Chair, I when the bid is awarded to these people that have now met all requirements of the process, they will tell us now what capacity do you have, so that they are able to know, with your capacity, Gebut, we'll be able to roll out to these many people. We don't know who's going to bid. We are waiting for that bid process to come, which has already been advertised already on the 8th of June. I think the anticipated closure date is the 10th of July. Very soon we'll be seeing by the 10th of July how many of the qualifying medical practitioners have were consolidated, co-opted, however, so that they are able to provide it. But their capacity will be able to tell us how many of the people will we be able to train. But until that process is finalized, I'm in Brazil. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Any new questions? Are we done? Thank you very much to the Secretariat, to the Department. We appreciate the briefing. I think we have raise some issues that you will take in consideration. A lot of what we've raised, members will lie with us once we start the legislative process in terms of what we put in the bill and then finally in the Act itself. But we've got a good basis in terms of where we are going in terms of the policy. And I think from the side of the committee, with the input that we've made, there's general satisfaction with the policy so that we can go ahead then with the bill. I know you still need secretary to get the minister to sign off on it, and you wanted this committee's input first. So thank you for that as well. Members, you are too anxious to leave. You have agreed last week that we will adopt minutes and reports. So I'm afraid those that are packing can pack out again. We're not leaving yet. We will excuse the department and the secretariat if they want to go, and then we'll ask members just to remain so that we can talk about the minutes and the reports. You can leave if you want to. Members, can I just get an indication? It is 12:30. Is it possible that we can adopt a few minutes at least before 1 o'clock? Does everybody have their minutes here? No. Nobody's got it here. Members, we're going to then, you've got yours. The secretary knew we were going to forget it at the office, so she's brought it with. So, you're going to get copies now. So we're going to rely on the Honourable Law so that we can quickly finish the minute. May I also indicate, members, that next week, Tuesday, we have the department to talk about the promotions in front of us. We've also requested that the secretariat be present in order to give us an evaluation of the promotions. I see they've both gone now. Oh, you're still here. Please relay the message, doctor, that we are expecting them also to give us a presentation. We are going to go ahead with that meeting. There is no way that we cannot go ahead with the meeting. So we are going ahead with the meeting in terms of the appointments. There was a document distributed to members on that. Can I ask that we prepare thoroughly for it? Immediately after that meeting, we've got 2 days meetings, Tuesday and Wednesday. It's a committee week. We are going to ask the researchers, the moment we finish, to prepare us for the meeting the next day on Petra, and to take us through the documents that they have prepared for Petra. And on Wednesday, we will then meet the department around Petra. We were supposed to have that briefing today, but we decided that it would be better to have it closer to the meeting. So they're going to brief us immediately after the meeting of Tuesday. We will give them, also decide to do so after the meeting so that we don't limit them in terms of time, that if they need a bit more time and we want to ask questions that they can actually do so. Honourable Kulabana?
Could you just tell me, I've got the Tetra one down. Number one, I don't, probably my error, but I don't have a venue. In fact, I don't have a venue for the Tuesday one either. Could you just tell me the venue for the Tuesday one, the venue for the Wednesday one, and tell me what sort of time, I know it had 7 o'clock at night on it, but I can't believe that, for the Tetra one on Wednesday. What sort of time do you envisage finishing that meeting?
Just the venues first. All of the meetings will be here. So both meetings will be here. Look, members, I think the Tetra issue is a huge issue. If one goes through what we have already and what we are going to get from the researchers as well, it will depend on us how long we stay here. But it most probably is the biggest capital expenditure of the police next to police, building of police stations. And it's not something that we can simply rush over. Obviously, we're not going to try and finish at 7 o'clock. But we also, in terms of the the many items that we have on our program, we might not have an opportunity to call them again, etc. So we want to extend, you know, to make sure that we deal with the issue thoroughly. Can we see to it, I know why members are asking this question, because you need to make flight arrangements, etc., etc. Can we try and see whether we finish that meeting? We're starting at 9 o'clock on Wednesday. On Tuesday, we start at 9:30. But on Wednesday, we're starting at 9 o'clock. Can we try and see that we try and finish by 5 o'clock instead of 7 or something like that? But it will be up to members as well in terms of our questions, etc. If you want to finish at 5, also know that at some point we might cut the questions. So it's 5 o'clock fine for Wednesday then. Then we know we're trying to finish at 5 o'clock. It might also be, and that's what we're trying to establish now, that the minister might come on Wednesday with the new national commissioner, but that won't take longer than 15 or minutes or half an hour. So, you know, that shouldn't take too long to impact on the rest of our program. Are we satisfied with that?
Last time we met here, there was the issue of General Mugui and the acting national commissioner to come and... Now, is that now being cancelled now? Don't take leave.
I can just help you. The decision was we can't... Sorry, you were busy. That we cancel it, and it will be rescheduled once the new National Police Commission is brought up to speed with the issue.
We took a decision this morning, Mr. George, as a committee, that we suspend Friday's meeting, which was going to deal with that as well as the other suspensions. That was going to deal with those. We said we want to give the commissioner an opportunity to get her head around the issue, and I also indicated that the minister wants to introduce the national commissioner to management. So we are keeping it on our agenda. We will deal with it. We're not taking it off our agenda. Okay, can we carry on? Can we start with the... 2.5 minutes. Okay. Members, we now have a problem that we don't have a quorum anymore to adopt minutes. But it's fine. I would suggest that we continue with this. We don't have to adopt them. We can make the changes to some of them so that we at least have progress. We can do the adoption when we have a quorum, because we can't continue to just delay these minutes. Can we look at the minutes of the 8th of February, please, 2012? Page 1. Page 2.
If I may just ask, under the Ministry of Police, there are two names, but no titles, so we're not too sure what they do in the ministry. Maybe we can just put, because we have job descriptions for everybody else, just not those two under Ministry of Police, maybe before.
Yeah, both of them, and also Joy's actually got a surname as well, so we need to put her surname there. Simeon is Minister's Liaison Officer, and Joy is Minister's Chief of Staff. So if we can just correct that. Anything else on page 2?
I would also just change the chairperson who welcomed those in attendance. It just, in English sounds better, that's all.
Anything else on page 2? Page 3? Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. If I'm going to... Pause, please indicate to me.
Sorry, if we could just go back to page 5 under Eastern Cape. I think that first bullet point should have the title Stock Theft Units in bold, as has the second point and the third point. It seems to be about stock theft units, just a layout issue. Got it? Yeah.
Page 6. Page 6, members, KwaZulu-Natal, if somebody can remind me, a rent-a-cop campaign has been implemented. What is that?
I remember it.
Rent-a-cop or adopt-a-cop?
No, it was rent-a-cop. People were paying the metro or something for to use police to guard certain areas. Am I not right? I say, I have this vague recollection, but I couldn't swear by it. I really don't know.
I think for clarity, because this looks very, very funny, and it might look like we're privatizing the police service, that we need to clarify this issue. Zola, if you can just go back and just remind us what exactly this is, so that we explain it better when we adopt the minutes. Mr. George says he rents free cops. Page 7. The same point applies to page 7 on the bold of what the issue are. So, for instance, under the fourth bullet, detective training should be the bold part of it. There. And then the fifth bullet on under the first paragraph, hawks or corruption, whatever you want to do, those one. Then the same under Limpopo, that we do that as well, correct that. Same under Northern Cape. Same under Northwest. Just the one from Northwest that's not there. Page 8. Honourable Mulabatsi.
Chairperson, thanks. It is the fifth bullet, police stations. The spelling of the word Mututum is Mothutlung. Mututum. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you for that, Honourable Mulabatsi. Anything else on page 8? Are we happy with page 8? Page 9. Can we have a specific look at the resolutions, members, whether you agree with those? And there's a bullet there that should just be removed. Can we also check, as we've agreed, whether these outstanding information have been received, it was received, okay. So we will not adopt this minute now, but we've dealt with it, so the next meeting we can just put the minutes. Can we deal with Tuesday, 14 February? Page 1. Page 2. Again, the Ministry of Police, Mr. Nkonunu's job description there, post description there as well, please. Opening and welcome, page 2, we are satisfied. Page 3. Anything on page 3? Honourable Mulabatsi?
Number 8.
Yes, you continue, please.
The committee was very concerned about the fact that subs were sometimes evicted from buildings like common criminals.
Yeah. I don't think one can, even people that are evicted from buildings are not necessarily common criminals. So let's just put it, the committee was very concerned about the fact that some subs were sometimes evicted from buildings or locked out from buildings. Locked out and evicted from buildings. And take out the common criminals.
I think we need to just take a decision on this business. You know, we tend to use subs as a word. But if you spell it out, we say, why would South African Police Service operate from... had all the buildings, you know, where would South African police operate from? So it should actually be, where would the? Now, I don't know if you want to go in and put a V in front of every time we use SAPS, or if we should just leave it, if we should accept that we're treating it as a sort of a word. But in fact, it should be the South African Police Service, so it should be the SAPS. I don't know if you want to correct it throughout, just a thought.
I think it's a valid thought. We need to put the in front. Like we would the department of, it's the, so we can just put it, they can just do a search on the computer program and add in the before all of that. Anything else on page 3? That goes for all minutes. We take this decision now for all minutes so that we don't have to repeat it. Anything else on page 3? Page 4? The space in between.
Why is it such a large... sorry.
Anything else on page 4? Would SAPS accept a 500,000 rand donation from a Mpumalanga businessman?
Sounds like we were making the offer, frankly. You know, would you accept 500 and it's a very odd way to phrase it. Should the question be, why would SAPS accept the donation, or were SAPS allowed to accept such a donation? I'm not sure what the question is supposed to be.
Yeah, I think the question might probably rather read, would SAPS be allowed to accept a donation from... Yeah. Would SAPS be allowed to accept a 500 donation from a longer businessman, and then the explanation about treasury, etc. can come in. Anything else on page 4? Page 5? Maybe just the last part on page 5 on a 500 donation, that it be moved over to the next page so that it makes logical, it forms the answer there. Anything else? When did Parliament open in February? Because I'm pretty sure I wasn't at this meeting. That's why I'm asking. Even though my name is here. I wasn't here. I wasn't present. No, I wasn't present. It was the week that I had the problem with my eye, so I wasn't here. I was definitely not here.
No, we definitely, I mean, everything else, police, old assembly chamber, yeah, eight,
yeah.
So we had the meeting.
No, I was definitely
after.
Not here. Okay. 21st of February, members, can we continue with that one? Page 1. By then I was back.
I don't know how I missed it, but it was in between you being in prison and hospital and everything else. Page 6 of the previous one, bullet point 1, and it's got a question mark. SAT should provide the committee with a breakdown on all the properties from which SAT was evicted. Question mark. I think the question mark was go.
Yeah.
Could I just ask, you know, there are lots of items that have to be answered here, presumably by the province, many, many questions. Now, have we set a date by which I don't see a date that's been set by which time we should receive the answers from the provinces, is what I'm saying. And
yep.
I think that goes to each of the sets of minutes.
We have received the information, but I take the point that the date should be reflected in the minutes as well, but we have received the information as those thick files that we got after these hearings, we have received them. We can ask the Secretary just go back and check on the deadlines that we set the department at that stage. Members, can we go to the 21st of February? Page 1? 21st of February, yeah. Page 1, we're happy. Page 2? Again, Mr. Nkonunu's designation. He's not a legal advisor, he lies an officer. Page 2? Page 3? Page 4. Page 5. Are we happy with that one? Thank you. February 28th, we're making good progress. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Thank you. 6th of March, page 1. 6th of March. Page 2. Just the alignment of these. Yeah. Page 2. Page 3. And we take the point of the V in front of subs, page 3. Page 4. Honourable Mulabacha, and page 3.
The last part one left on page 3. Every time the committee embarks on oversight visits, is it not right to say every time the committee undertakes an oversight visit?
All of those would be correct.
Is it?
Oh. Each time the committee embarks on an oversight visit, it's fine. Each time you go and do it, it's fine either way. It's absolutely fine.
Page 5. Page 6. Seven of March. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page
marriage for?
We are happy.
Thank you. 13th of March. Page 1.
Can I just back up 1 second? On page 3 of the previous ones, the following questions, concerns are raised by the committee. Something like this, the process should be started on a write-up and thanks should be expressed, etc. Was that done, or is this is that something that should be done, or is it just something that's going to sit in the minutes, or is a letter going to be sent, or I'm not sure what the process is here.
I think it was just a comment that one of the members made. I think if I remember correctly, it was Honourable Groenewald who made that comment on that day. It was actually just a comment made by a member. Okay, can we go to the 13th of March? Page 1. Page 2. Again, I just think the alignment there, that we can just look, that it just looks a bit neater. Page 2, anything else? Sorry, I can't hear you, Honourable Ndlovu.
Why do you put the first paragraph in brackets, the bold paragraph in brackets?
This was not part of the committee program, Honourable Ndlovu. It was a special meeting that was called. So it's just, we can actually take the brackets out and just put it as a paragraph, but it needs to be noted. Maybe we can put in the word to note or to be noted. That this wasn't a part of the committee's program, it was a special meeting. And then we can remove the brackets. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Can I just, as a matter arising from this minute, there has been a request sent by the chairperson, now deputy minister, to the Public Service Commission to investigate this matter. And can we ask the secretary to draft a letter that we can send to the Public Service Commission to find out how far they are with the investigation, so that we can just follow up on this issue. The last one that we've got to deal with today is the report on Tetra. Done. Okay, that was with the changes. Yeah, okay. So this was the change one. Members would remember that there were changes that we made. So next week, members, 5 minutes, we can just adopt all these minutes when we do have a quorum here. We can even put them all at the same time. So thank you very much. We will then meet 9:30 on Tuesday. Same venue. Can I ask members to ensure that they take their documents with over the weekend so that we come prepared for Tuesday's meeting as well. Thank you very much. Thanks, members.